It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up 9 o'clock, the year in media. Scott Smith's going to be in studio. Also tonight, I'm excited about this. Richard Wooten's going to be on the show. Former Chicago police officer. He's representing retired African-American police officers who have said, and I really want to talk to him about this, but essentially the argument is they want Mayor Emanuel to stop with his task force, stop with his committee, stop with his quote-unquote improvements of the and reform of the police department until community has given input. Like right now, it just feels like, you know, he almost knee-jerk went, I'm getting this rich guy and this rich guy and this policy person from the East Coast and this policy person from the West Coast, and we're going to figure this out. And the people that he missed were Chicagoans from the communities that were affected. So this group is asking that Mayor Emanuel slow his roll. That's essentially it. So we'll see. Richard Wooten will be on the show coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. And then Chris Jones is going to do the year in theater. We're going to talk about Red Moon Theater. But this hour, let's talk architecture. Lee Bay. Former architecture critic for the Sun-Times. He had one of my favorite blogs of all time, Beyond the Boat Tour. Used to get him in trouble with the boat tour people. He's worked all over town. He's an architecture photographer, writer, critic, and he is in studio with me tonight. Lee, good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
So let's talk. I want to talk about the year in architecture because I do feel like the this year for Chicago was huge.
Oh, yeah.
You had, you know, so much to do with the Obama Library, so much to do with the Lucas Museum, which is now hot again because of the movies. but there's a lot of other things that were in the mix as well. And we're going to get to that. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the hour. But the number one thing this week, and I think it really is about the year as well, is that the design, the finalists are in for the designs for the Obama Library.
Exactly. These are seven architects, one local, the rest scattered throughout the country and, I guess, world in one respect, who are selected by the foundation to design the library. So they'll push forward concepts and things, and at some point a winner will be picked. What we don't know is also which site. There are two sites
right. That's
been looked at, one in Jackson Park, one in Washington Park. We don't know which one is being picked. But this is kind of interesting process because presumably they're going to allow each architect to sort of either find his site or inform that somehow this process will inform the other process as well.
So would a finalist make plans for both sites, or would they just say, I like Jackson Park better, here's my design for Jackson Park?
This is a good question, and I haven't been able to suss that out. And then there's also a bit of things that I'm hearing, and it's been reported in the Sun-Times as well, that the First Lady could make the selection of the site as soon as next month or the month after, to pick which of the two sites. So.
You still have your money on Washington Park.
I still have my money on Washington Park. And I think we've talked about this before, that in Washington Park at King Drive and 55th Street, you have all the things that the RFP and the sort of
what they've said they've wanted.
Exactly. So it's close to transit.
Yeah,
close to transit. It's close enough to a neighborhood that they can cause real economic development. All those things seem to be more present on that site than they are on the other one.
So what do we know about these finalists? I mean, when you saw the list of finalists, do you say, oh, I know these, I know that. Oh, that's great. Oh, that's a terrible choice. So what do you know about the finalists?
You know, most of them I know, and some of them I've known personally over the years. And it's a good crop. I mean, I'll say that. You know, you look at this thing because many people thought that David Ajay, the African-born architect who is tight with the president, that it was wired for him. And that maybe this process was a bit of a, you know.
Sure, a Chicago library,
yeah,
sure.
We already got our guy.
We kind of know how that works. Yes,
we got our guy. We're just going to pick someone else, you know. But I think by bringing forth these architects, Renzo Piano, John Ronan here locally, and others, it really shows that they really, it gives the impression, at the very least, that they're going through a deliberative effort to really pick the right architects.
So from your vantage point of covering architecture and understanding architecture, when you see who they chose as finalists, what are we seeing? Is it a progressive look at architecture, or are they going with more classical? What are they doing by choosing the people that they chose?
It seems like they're looking for a really progressive design, that what they're not looking for is a sense of what you got in the Bush Library. No disrespect to our past president, but it's a really classical design. If you go see it or see images of it online, it looks like it could be anywhere, sober, you know, 20th century sort of look, although he was the first president of the 21st century, the library looks like it's 40 years earlier than that. I think in this case, because what's been talked about is that this library, that what the foundation has envisioned from the president's vision and the first lady's vision, is a building that really is a bit of a device, right? It'll have gardens, it'll have... they even at one point talked about a thing called biomimicry, where the building itself is rendered invisible to nature. So it's shaped and molded in a way so that birds can get down with it and, you know, and there are plants growing with it. So it's really this kind of
thing. Let me ask you this. I mean, is Chicago ready for that kind of thing? I mean, you know Chicago and their response to architecture. Mm-hmm. We have Jeannie Gang. We have a lot of great architecture here. Is Chicago ready for something that would be, you know, blended with nature in this kind of progressive architecture?
You know, we do a thing here that no other city does, is that if a building looks too far out of the norm, we complain about it and then we love it, right? So it's the Picasso, right? Which is a statue, of course, but a sculpture, but they revealed the Picasso in 68 or 67. Everybody hated it, so you should tear it down and put a statue of Ernie Banks. And now it's loved for 40 years. Jury stood out on Soldier Field, but some people love it who didn't like it before. So, you know, we go through this thing. I think maybe the Lucas Museum could possibly go through this thing as well, possibly, where it's unliked, and then you sort of look at it and you think, yeah, that's our building. That's ours.
I'm excited about it. I feel like looking at that and knowing that it could be a month or two, this is a positive story for Chicago, a positive story for Washington Park or Jackson Park, but Washington Park, and it's one that I'm very happy to continue the conversation on.
Indeed. I mean, this is a $400 million project probably at its base, so this is a big investment on the South Side.
That's great. Lee Bay, architecture critic. Okay, so when we come back, we'll do a little departure off of architecture because mm-hmm. we're excited to celebrate a little bit of Chicago history. 90th birthday for Wilson Frost, a former alderman, city council. You brought this to my attention. I didn't know anything about it. I started looking in. It's a fascinating story.
It really is. I mean, if you're an old-timer like me, I turned 50 in October. This was like the cool story when you were 11 or 12 years old. So Richard J. Daley, the old man, dies, of course, you know, catches Chicago by surprise. And so there's this talk of succession. Who succeeds right. the mayor? Wilson Frost, an African American alderman from the South Side, is also Mayor Pro Tem as well.
Sure.
So City Council Mayor
He's
Pro Tem.
He's essentially second in charge.
Although it's not really discussed and it's not really put in legislative form yet. So he goes to take the seat in the fifth floor with, you know, after, you know, a respectable amount of time is gone, a day or two or three, whatever it may be, and finds that the door to the fifth floor is locked. And he can't get in. No one's letting him in. And then we have to find a successor, and that process led to Mike Belandic, who, of course, was mayor for 2 years until Jane Byrne.
It's a fascinating story about Chicago then, and a little bit of Chicago now as we sort of see how politics have sort of always favored certain ethnicities and the African-American base continues to get shut out.
Exactly.
But we'll talk. So it's his 90th birthday coming up. Birthday. He's in California. He's agreed to talk to us. So we'll take a break and we'll get Alderman Frost on the line to talk to him about his recollections of that time and what he thinks about what's happening in Chicago now. Excellent. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight, Lee Bay, architecture critic, let's say photographer, blogger, man about town.
I like that.
Man used to work for the Mayor Daley administration. Second Mayor Daley.
That's right.
One of the men who worked for the first, I guess, in a way, as the alderman. Alderman Wilson Frost, who we talked about right before the break, is on the line with us. He turns 90 this week. Alderman Frost, thanks so much for taking some time to talk to us tonight.
Yes, you're welcome.
So, Alderman Frost, you know, Mr. Bay here was talking about your story, and he essentially set it up that, you know, when Mayor Daley died, you were Mayor Pro Tem, you were second in command, you were ready to take over the office, and it was essentially locked. React to that. Is that the accurate way that that Lee remembers the story?
That's substantially correct.
Tell us, what was your reaction to that at the time? Why don't we start with when Mayor Daley, when Richard J. Daley died in office, what was your reaction? I mean, essentially, you thought you were mayor.
Well, it wasn't a situation that I dreamed up. I got information from knowledgeable people who understood municipal government. I talked to the attorney general for the state of Illinois, and under the system that we had at that particular time, under the succession rule, I would have been the only person that was qualified to serve during that period until the council elected a mayor.
So, Alderman, take us back to that day. So you've got this ruling, you've got this sense of what the next move should be, and then you go to the fifth floor? I mean, walk us through that a little bit.
Well, when I attempted to go to the fifth floor, I was stopped, and as a matter of fact, they had locked the mayor's office, and I was unable to get in, and I didn't want to create a ruckus over it, so I went back and had my lawyers to talk with them, and subsequently we had some meetings, and then we were able to work out an accord. But during that particular time, between the time of the mayor's death and the time of the next council meeting, things were in limbo, and there was a lot of controversy as to what my status was.
Mm-hmm. And we should go back a bit because, you know, this is 40 years almost already, and many people either weren't born or they were too young to remember. But, you know, but Mayor Daley, Richard J. Daley, had been mayor since the mid-50s, the only mayor most people had ever known, and he dies suddenly, and there's this scramble. Tell us about what that time was like.
Well, it wasn't really a scramble. It was a situation where used the law and had done research, had my lawyers to do research, and under the situation, I proclaimed that I was the mayor. Mm-hmm. And I had talked with other leading, knowledgeable persons who agreed with me. And then we didn't want to create a situation where the city would end up being in limbo without the ability to make decisions and everything, so that subsequent to that, we agreed after meetings with both sides, the sides who agreed with me and the side who disagreed with me, and we were able to work out an accord for the benefit of the people of Chicago.
Now, you know, I'm a South Sider by birth, and I still live in the South Side. This was huge news in my household when it was happening and I was coming up. There was this feeling that this was happening to you because you were black, and
yes,
there was no way a brother was going to get
well,
to the fifth floor.
Well,
talk about
again,
that a little bit.
Again, you know, we're talking some many years ago, mm-hmm, and I might have had my feelings and personal feelings about the reasons and what have you, mm-hmm, but it was never said that, so that for me to think that, that would have been my thoughts. But again, I couldn't use that as a basis for succeeding. So, you know, I had to deal with the matter as a matter of taking the best opportunity that I had at that particular time.
And what was worked out, am I right now, this is where my memory gets a little foggy,
yeah,
was that you became finance chairman. Eddie Verdoliak was finance chair, right, in the city council, and then it became you. Is that how it went?
Yes, I became chairman of the finance committee. Well, under the proposed changes that they were attempting to arrange, Verdoliak would have became chairman of finance. I think at that particular time, Michael Blandick was chairman of finance.
That's right.
Michael Blandick became the mayor for In their proposal, Verdoliak was supposed to become chairman of finance. Subsequent to that, well, then, in the accord that we were able to work out, I became chairman of finance.
Alderman, let me ask you this. I mean, as it all kind of played out and you became the chair of finance committee, you know, when you look back on that time and you look back as, you know, on your time serving the city of Chicago, is it a positive experience for you? Did that sour your experience of being in Chicago politics?
No, it didn't. You know, I enjoyed being in Chicago politics, and I felt that I had a constituency to represent, mm-hmm, and I enjoyed doing that, and I used my best efforts and my intellect in order to accomplish that. you know, I couldn't end up getting caught in a situation where that I was going to feel that I was restrained because of race or any of those things. I had run for alderman in the 21st Ward initially against a white candidate and was successful at the time when the ward changed from a white to mixed, and I was successful in that endeavor. So, you know, I understood politics, and one of the things in politics, everyone wants to succeed and to enhance their position, and I understood that.
You know, when you look at from afar, you're in California now, and, you know, when you look back and you see what's happening in Chicago with Mayor Emanuel and the calls for resignation and his relationship with the African-American community here in Chicago, when you look back, I mean, I kind of set it up with sort of Chicago then versus Chicago now. How do you think the city has grown or not grown from your vantage point as once a sitting alderman who may have been, taken advantage of when you were an alderman?
Well, I'm not totally familiar and up to date with what's going on there, so that it might be difficult for me to make comparisons. And I don't want to compare the time that I was there to the time now when I'm not a player and when I'm not, you know, familiar with everything that's going on. So it would be totally unfair.
So tell me what things are like now. You turn 90 in a couple of days. You're in warm weather, although it's warm here. What's life been like for you post-Chicago?
Well, again, you know, I left the city council, went to the Board of Tax Appeals, mm-hmm. enjoyed 12 years there. And for me, life in politics was not too bad. I made a lot of good friends, and I got an opportunity to have some pleasant experiences. I had an opportunity to go to Europe for the city of Chicago and do a lot of things. And I feel that this has caused me to be able to pass my experiences on to my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren.
Well, Alderman Frost, we want to say happy birthday.
Indeed.
And happy holidays. And thanks for joining us here on the Download. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
All right. You're welcome.
Alderman Frost, the 34th Ward, before that, the 21st Ward, mm-hmm. and he talked about being on the board of the, I guess, the Tax Board of Appeals. Is that
exactly.
Which is where aldermen go to cash in.
That's right.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, you get an appointment of some sort on your
yeah,
on your
right.
way out. But I tell you, it's hard to do this without the benefit of a time machine. But Wilson Frost, as alderman in his day, was one hell of a character.
It's so fun reading about it because the idea of, and we, you know, he talked about it, but the idea that they essentially said, we don't have the keys.
Yeah, exactly.
He went
exactly.
up there and they're like, we don't know where the keys are, man. We don't know what to tell you.
And they're saying this to a guy who's an attorney. He's smart. He's intelligent. So
he
knows.
Second in command.
Exactly.
It's an amazing story.
But he was a heck of a figure. If you're growing up in Chicago, a young kid, particularly a young black kid like me, and you see him and the cool way he handled it, and then to know that, you know, a handful of years later, there would be a female mayor in Jane Byrne and a African American mayor in Harold Washington. That the seeds of that change, I think, were
he was this close to being the first black mayor, which would have been what 8 years before Harold Washington.
Yeah, it would have been 76.
So there you go. Mm-hmm. Wilson Frost. When we come back more. We'll get back on the year in Chicago architecture with Lee Bay. Stay with us. It's the Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Lee Bay in studio with me. Talking about the year in Chicago architecture. So much to talk about. We kind of laid it out because we could talk about, I guess we could break it down where we do what was introduced, what was completed, what was in construction, what was destroyed. Right? That's like, and the one that kills me on the one that's destroyed, and it's, again, you know, we already talked about the Obama Library and the designs this week, but the other big story was the William Walker mural at the church by Cabrini Green that was just whitewashed.
Exactly.
How does that happen?
This was a bit frustrating for those of us who's followed this mural and been a fan of it. It's on this old church, 617 West Evergreen. That's right in the footprint of, obviously, the Cabrini Green redevelopment that's been happening for the past 10 or 15 years. And groups like the Chicago Public Art Group, I think even Alderman Walter Burnett and others, have been working with the church, the small congregation, to preserve the mural in some way and to find the funds
It's beautiful. And it really told a story. And I always thought that it was appropriate to be there because it told a story of a place that isn't there anymore and we may not even see remnants of.
Exactly. And for those of you who haven't seen it, it's painted on the entire face of the church, and there's this beautiful, almost Picasso-like, although Picasso borrowed from Africans, so it's the returning of sorts, but there's this beautiful abstract figures of men, you know, sharing bread, people having the same face. I mean, it's a really beautiful thing that speaks to mankind and peace, that kind of thing. Everyone from Anne Frank to Malcolm X's reference. This mural's from 1971, really right. Radical, really progressive for the time, and it's lost. It's gone.
So a new owner just owns that church. It's not a church anymore, right?
I think as we speak now, it still is. But there's a couple who, from what I've gathered with my meager reporting skills, there's a couple that is looking to purchase it, and there's a deal in the works. And whether this whitewashing was part of the deal or not, I don't know.
So it's like when I go buy a condo and I'm like, can you please bring the walls back to white?
Exactly.
What is that?
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
That's terrible. And that story has gained traction. I've seen it gone viral on Facebook and others just about the concept that just in the, you know, a part of Chicago history, a big part of Chicago history, was eliminated.
Exactly. 40 years.
Let's talk about that, from that to repurposing. And one of the biggest stories of Chicago architecture had to be the 606 Trail, which was launched this year, which was along the old Bloomingdale train line in Wicker Park, Bucktown, Humble Park, like all the way down that train line. And it was created into sort of like a High Line Park.
Exactly. Although it's longer and had been in the works longer than the High Line, but the comps are favorable in some sense. It's a linear park that links together these neighborhoods, and it's a work of beauty. I mean, the neighborhoods push right up against this elevated line, of course, you can run, you can bike. There's art elements that are there now, and it's really a unique space. And then what they also did was that they placed new parks. Below the embankment, next to the embankment, in various parts that serve as a way to get up onto it, and it's really, I mean, it's been a national, if not an international thing, and really shows the next generation of parks.
Yeah, it's tremendous to me because they've always found ways to put art around that train line, you know, whether it be murals on the side, you know, and where it was overgrown grass. And a lot of Chicagoans knew that space to you could get up there.
Exactly.
You didn't want to go up there because there's a lot of stuff going on. But it really showed, it was a testament not only to the neighborhoods that were involved and the fundraising to get it done, but also to Mayor Emanuel, who helped usher this new era of this progressive parks in.
You know, he's taking his lumps now, but mad props to him on this. I mean, he made it a campaign promise. That's how far ahead he was in this. I mean, who makes parks and a specific park a campaign promise? He's able to do that in this case and marshal the resources to get it together.
Now, the other big when I think of construction projects, I think of downtown Chicago because Wolf Point comes to mind, and the buildings that are all sort of centered around Wolf Point right now. You can see them right where the river bends when you get right down by the Merchandise Mart.
Exactly.
You can see some monster construction happening. There are buildings. There are three of them maybe that are coming up in that, on that. And that's a big thing for 2015 and big for 2016 too.
It really is. I mean, people have been talking about the redevelopment of Wolf Point for 60 years or more. I mean, it's right at the bend of the river, as you said, where the north branch goes one way, obviously north, and the south branch goes south. And, you know, who was going to do it? How do you get it together?
It used to be a part like the merchandise parking lot or the Holiday Inn. Right.
And now it's finding this new use of buildings, and you know, these, you know, construction there is going to be wrapping up, I think, over the next year to two, but the buildings are there now. You can see them coming up, and it provides an interesting sort of back wall to the river. You know, usually, like where we are now at Michigan, looking west on the river, it kind of looked on into infinity, but then buildings began to pop up. But now it's sort of like a a wall. The river downtown kind of forms a room. You've got the side walls with the buildings on each side of the river. Now you have this interesting back wall to the west.
It's interesting to me because those buildings are so slim. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at, they're two huge buildings. I mean, they're going to be, I don't know how many floors they're going to be at the end, 70, 80, 90. I don't know. It's a huge amount.
It is 65 or more. Yeah.
But they're built on a plot of land that's about as big as a studio. I mean, it really is like this, you know, like they crunched them in and they're really vertical. And it's different than a lot of the buildings that are down there, but it's definitely going to add to the skyline or at least the river, architectural beauty of the river.
You know, one of the things that Mayor Daley did that was kind of smart, and he had a guy there, Sam Asefa, who was in charge of some elements of planning for a while, a really smart guy who I think moved back to San Francisco. But one of the things that he pushed was taller, elegant buildings, that we shouldn't be afraid of height. Which you think we wouldn't be in a city like Chicago, but that the idea of a thin, tall building could be an elegant thing. And, of course, there's value, and there's all kinds of real estate reasons why you want to do that. There, you know, obviously, a 60-story building, that 60th floor is more valuable than a 35th floor of a squat building. But also, it enhances the skyline, and it makes possible a kind of a building that we ordinarily wouldn't have looked at.
Lee Bay, architecture critic. We're talking about the year in architecture here in Chicago. When we come back, we'll talk about what's to come. Mm-hmm. The Lucas Museum is a big part of that. And also some changes at the city level. Talk about the planning commissioner and some of the plans for architecture coming up here in the city, not just downtown, but in neighborhoods. Lee Bay, Justin Kaufman, it's The Download. Stay with us. So Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Lee Bay in studio with me talking about the year in architecture. 312-981-7200 if you feel like we missed something, because we did. That's the one thing. Whenever you do these, we've done these a couple times, it's always like, you didn't mention Millennium Park. I'm like, sorry. But the one thing, you know, I find interesting is there's been a lot of announcements about architecture. I mean, there was the biennial that the city put together to celebrate the lakefront and the architecture here. But there also were announcements for the Lucas Museum, which was huge, which I think is a little bit of 2014 and a 2015. But also the Pullman National Park, the president came down.
Exactly, in February.
So let's start there. Let's start with Pullman.
Well, this is a good thing. And, you know, in full disclosure, I mean, people know I live there, but I don't own property, so I can speak freely without, you know, enriching myself, believe me. But Pullman is the company town built by George Pullman to construct his rail car back in the 1890s. You know, most people probably forgot about it who didn't live there. There was
Southeast Side neighborhood.
So we're talking like the Bishop Ford Expressway and 115th, 111th, somewhere around in that, just east of that, just west of there. And now it's a national park. The president came in February and signed the papers for it. But more than that, there's a new restaurant there, which is a big thing. Pullman Cafe. There's Method, the soap guys who there's a big plant there. There's Chicago Neighborhood Initiatives run by David Doig, a former colleague of mine back in the Daley years, and he's rehabbing houses there, and they built a giant shopping center on the edge of it, edge of Pullman, that has a Walmart in it, but it's a grocery store and other stores. So there's really, after years of, you know, the preservationists and the residents holding on and talking about the benefits of this great neighborhood, and it really is, that now finally the changes are happening.
Well, maybe we can transition into the planning commissioner here in Chicago. I mean, there has been, at least in 2015, a look to not just downtown Chicago, but the neighborhoods.
Exactly. The new commissioner, David Reifman, who's a former zoning attorney, took the spot. And, you know, and it's interesting to say, okay, then that's Chicago, right? The zoning attorney becomes planning commissioner. What the hell is going on, right? I was at an event with him, and he and I knew each other, and I was at an event with him around 2 weeks ago, I guess. And he really spoke passionately about the need to help Chicago's communities, that downtown, glittering and beautiful as it is basically done, you know, other than here and there and here and there, that the new front for this commissioner and for this administration is neighborhoods. And that was an important thing to hear.
You know, it's funny because you think of the planning commissioner, and I'm not even sure what a planning commissioner does, because would the planning commissioner be involved with, like, fixing you know, bad intersections and things like that? I mean, is it that down to that? Like, well, what's happening with Elston, Damon, and Fullerton, where they come together and they're doing that bypass?
You know, it would be CDOT, but back in the old, the city's Department of Transportation, but back in the olden days, under Richard J. Daley especially, the planning commissioner was almost first among equals, that any public works project, anything, flow through that apartment and that department in some way. So the planning commissioner was able to speak to the mayor and say, this intersection needs to be fixed. It's a public works issue, but it's a planning issue as well.
Got it.
And to be able to bring that heft back, hopefully, to that department. This is one of the first big city, professionalized big city planning departments in the nation back when it was formed in the 50s. And, you know, the Burnham plan, we all know that, but there's been plans subsequent to that that have helped save the lakefront. I mean, the lakefront and the river and other things. And that department needs to be brought back to that sort of status, where it's not just bureaucrats, but it's visionaries there that are driving development in the city.
Well, it seems like this mayor, this administration seems to have put a premium on architecture, on planning, on bringing new works to Chicago. The Lucas Museum is a perfect example of that. We've seen a lot of fight, and they're still in the courts. We still haven't seen an actual, verdict that says whether or not they can build where they want to build. But that was kind of the one piece of architecture that stirred a lot of different ideas and a lot of different feelings about architecture here in Chicago because of where it was located.
It did, exactly. You said it exactly right. That's a unique, well, if not unique, but it's a beautiful Chicago thing where you had regular people arguing about and talking about whether a museum on the lakefront was in that part of the lakefront was a good thing. So you're having people talking about the context of a building. The design, of course, also when it got released twice, got some criticism as well, and some support, but some criticism right. as well. But all that is good. I mean, you get people talking about design and place and context. That is good for a city like this.
So let's talk about what's next. Mm-hmm. So in 2016, you mentioned the planning commissioners looking at the neighborhoods. When I think of some of the projects that I'm anticipating, obviously what happens with the Lucas Museum and the Obama Library are huge.
Exactly.
Jeannie Gang's got their plans in place for new skyscrapers. What mm-hmm. should we be looking forward to in Chicago when it comes to 2016?
You know, I think a few things. I think that you're going to see more height and density in the South Loop. The South Loop, Columbia College, and you're going to see sort of North Loop, River North kind of heights there coming up in plans for those being developed over the years, over the next couple of years, beginning next year. I think that at some point this next year, there needs to be an encore to the 606. There's tons of rail land around Chicago, elevated rail that's sitting fallow. It's grown up, vegetated, that kind of thing, and I think that someone's going to say we need one more.
What's the ETA on the DePaul Stadium?
I think that's coming up next year.
That's coming up next year. Would that be next year?
At least construction, I think, is coming up. Okay. That's one that's worth checking out. Navy Pier, the work is going to continue there at Navy Pier to turn that into a better place. The new Ferris wheel, old one got torn
that's
down.
Right.
New one's
that's
coming
right.
up next year.
We can all look forward to that.
That's right. That's right. This one will have TV screens in it. Hopefully, it'll go faster. The other one I didn't like, man.
Because the one time I was on it, all it did the whole time I was on it was do a McDonald's commercial. Because McDonald's sponsored it, so they'd be like, take a look to the left. That's a building. Wouldn't you want a quarter pounder? And I'm like, what is this, man? That did not feel very Chicago.
No, it did not.
Or maybe it was. I don't know. But so those are the big projects.
And then whatever happens in the neighborhoods. I think the South Side particularly was happening in Washington Park with the library, of course, but other parts of the South Side. Englewood is also worth watching, where the Whole Foods and the complex around that is going to begin to take shape.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting time next year in the neighborhoods, especially.
Lee Bay, architecture critic, reporter, columnist, blogger, photographer, you play any music?
No, not at all. And I don't sing either, so that's the thing. Believe me.
Have a happy holiday, man. Good to see you.
Thank you. You too.
And continued success, and we will talk again in January.
Indeed.